So we work for a company called Black Marble. I've met some of you over the last few years. We do a lot of presentations over here. We're now set up in Ireland as well as the UK. I think that's the old deck, but we'll live. That's fine. We're a deep dev house specializing in all things Microsoft, the joy of Microsoft. But we really work in sort of specialist web, front end, delivery, that sort of thing. And we have a specialist area which is around Team Foundation Server. Does anybody here use Team Foundation Server? I'm going to assume you all like it because you use it, maybe. Does anybody here not know what Team Foundation Server is? Some of you, okay. So Team Foundation Server is Microsoft's successor to SourceSafe for repository control of source of applications. But it's actually also a whole process layer. Build servers, test management servers, lab management, provisioning of virtual machines for testing, and effectively delivering a complete ALM solution across your organization, from the very small to the very, very large, the one-man shops up to the banks. Team Foundation Server is an absolutely amazing product. Now, if you haven't seen Team Foundation Server, and you're actually looking at quality, and it doesn't matter whether it's Microsoft or Java you're using, TFS is language agnostic. I'd strongly suggest you actually catch Roy, who I don't think is actually in yet, or any of the Microsoft guys. They will be demonstrating TFS in an event later. I don't know when that is. We'll be able to tell you. Well worth a couple of hours of your time. Definitely well worth your time. So I'm Robert Hogg. I'm the MD at Black Marble. I'm an MVP for... I was Visual Studio, then Architecture, then BizTalk, and now Connected Systems, and I specialize in sort of deep connectivity systems. But my interest on the business side is to make sure that we're actually pushing forward on interesting and innovative products and also actually making things work. I'm joined today by Robert Hancock. You can introduce himself, maybe.
I guess with that, we'll crack on and get on with the talk.
We have a simple naming policy. Everyone calls Robert at Black Marble.
Yeah.
Okay, can you move on? So, now we're actually a Surface house. We develop on the Surface. There's a Surface 1 over there. I'll be talking about Surface 2 with Robert this afternoon. And I genuinely think Surface is an amazing product. But we had a very strange set of problems. In the Black Marble offices, there's a Surface in the seating area, and everyone's coming in and using Surface. And people are saying, great, we'll use it for this application. And 90% of the applications people were suggesting were touch applications. I'd like this Surface. Could you mount it on a wall? And for those of you who can't see, it's that very large box over there, about yay deep, and it weighs, what, 150 pounds, 200 pounds, some huge number. It'd take the wall out. And they say, I'd like it in my desk to do this sort of thing. What you actually want is a touch application for yourself. And we were actually showing people our Surface applications, which were massive multi-touch, and they just didn't understand the concept of the separation between massive multi-touch and multi-touch. So we took on ourselves to actually build some just standard touch applications for use inside Black Marble. And the idea was that we'd take information from the whole of Black Marble, from Exchange Server, from SharePoint, from TFS, and surface it, not as in the surface, but surface it through the business. So what we actually have is, in every public area in Black Marble, there are multi-touch monitors bolted to the walls. Outside every meeting room, there is a small touch monitor. In every dev pit and project manager pit, there are monitors bolted up on the inside of the walls with read-only screens, and small read-only screens with pictures and that sort of thing. And all of these screens are controllable from a central server, and the central server then fronts on. I've got to actually say the implementation of Candy was remarkably cheap. The screens were fairly readily available, touch screens, £100, €100 a pop. The read-only screens were in fact old developer screens because the devs had a new refresh of screens, and the small touch screens were €100 each or something. In hardware, we just bolted some servers up inside the roof to front this up. Maybe €1,000 in hardware for the whole system. Very cheap. Reused a bit of old hardware. We've actually replaced the PCs driving the screens with Acer Revos because they're quieter. We did that last month. So we've got, I think we've got a short video.
Yeah.
I think we'll play without music because it's very cheesy 70s adult theme music. I don't know why, but never mind. I didn't make the video, I hasten to add. So I'll just describe. So just to give you an example, that's just some of the read-only screens. That's what Dev Pit 1, I think. Inside Dev Pit 1. And that actually shows all of the projects in Black Marble. There's if you think the screen is actually very, very wide and it pans through all of the projects, at any point in time that the projects fail, the screen starts flashing. Obviously, none of our projects ever failed, but if they did, they would flash red. On the multi-touch screens, that's an example of actually the TFS builds, where they're all going. You can also expand them down and drill down into them to show the build charts, the burn-down charts, that sort of thing. Calendars and turn the rooms. And the Black Marble Tea Lady. Now, it might sound a very strange thing to have as a tea lady inside a multi-touch application, but actually between the build monitor and the tea lady in every meeting room, we're finding actually our meetings are about 15 to 20 minutes shorter because you don't have to go and make coffees and teas. You go to the tea lady, just select some teas and coffees, and somebody comes and brings it to you. You don't have to go and find somebody and disrupt the meeting to try and do that sort of thing. And the bill monitors mean when somebody says, where's my project, you can actually drill down and actually find where everything is. So a bit of light-hearted fun has actually turned out to be quite a useful product inside Black Marble. Now, what it now shows is, now that's a nice example of a multi-touch application. That's outside one of the meeting rooms. Normally it just shows the calendar of the room, but just to show that it actually can have all the pictures and that sort of thing. The pictures are coming from SharePoint, the calendars are obviously coming from Exchange, the booking are coming from Exchange, and obviously the TFS stuff's coming from TFS, I think that's it. So, to give you an example, that's what Black Marble looks like inside, and then there's applications on the surface where you can flick photos around onto different screens and all sorts of snazzy stuff like that. Fine. So the architecture is fairly straightforward. A series of servers at the bottom, a service layer on the top providing the view model for every screen. So all of the screens, in fact, are very dumb. They just actually go to the view model inside the server. And then a set of Acer Revos. If you haven't seen the Revo, it's effectively a laptop in a box, about that big, by that. About €200, incredibly cheap, very powerful for driving screens and touch, highly recommend them. And then each Revo runs between 4 to 8 different monitors, either USB touch or large touch, and then each screen has a unique number, and then they're assigned to places, and the whole thing works quite nicely, nice and easy. Okay? So, when we were... This talk is about Phone 7, I hasten to add, not about Candy, but I want to give you a bit of context about why we did what we did. So, when we were... it was actually when we were out at the PDC, wasn't it? We were actually looking for applications to build. So we were, the first thing we built was a game called 07. Now just a quick question, how many of you have actually seen a Phone 7? How many of you actually have a Phone 7? Oh, cool, okay. For those of you who've got a Phone 7, there's an application on there which we built called 07. It's a little game. If you want it, it's free. It's quite jolly. We built an AI with a project we did years ago with a friend of ours called Pete Cowling. And we then surfaced it up inside Phone 7, which was rather nice. Unfortunately, we made a slight mistake there that the AI is a little bit hard, and most people can't beat it on beginner, and after medium it gets a bit hard. So we'll wind the AI. If you do have problems, we will be winding the AI back on that. Now, actually, just as a quick side on 07, 07's been mediumly well received. The major criticism was the help. So we did a second release, and if you actually have a Phone 7, I'd strongly suggest you actually look, because the help system, we've actually had quite a lot of praise for. We actually just within half a day, because it's all built in Silverlight, a nice couple of Silverlight pages with some animations, just showing the individual moves you can make, you hit play, the whole thing's animated, very easy to do. So a game went up, but really we're a business, so a game wasn't really appropriate, so we thought we need to get something else up. We're an ALM house. We specialize in putting TFS in for software houses. Richard Fennell, who runs that part of the business, is an ALM MVP. And if you want to learn about TFS, I'm sure Richard will be coming over and doing some presentations on TFS. I would strongly urge you to see him. But don't tell him I say that, because he's actually rather good. But I can't say that, because he's one of my best friends. So we thought, we have Candy, we have a service layer. Why don't we build a TFS build monitor for PhoneSim, natural extension? Because one of the things, again, is when we're actually out on a customer site, I want to say, they say, what states are building? It's crack the laptop up, try and get a connection, try and get a web browser, yada yada. So we built a Phone 7 version. But we also realized at the same time we can actually put work items and work item tracking, because TFS allows us to put all of the work items against the project in, and sort of developers take a work item, do code against the work item, and check the whole thing in together, which is part of a build process. So we decided to do that as well. So I can sit with the customer on site, add work items to a project, and actually, well, you'll see, you'd actually be able to build the whole thing remotely as well.
Yeah.
So, actually, I think we've already done this bit.
Yeah. What we can do now is we'll skip in. We'll talk about work items. We'll go in and give a quick demo of the, TFS build monitor working in the emulator.
One of the parts of this talk is as much to have a chat to you all about our experiences. So far it's all good. We've had a few challenges. So we'll do a demonstration of the whole thing working, and then we'll actually go into some code and do Q&A and that sort of thing. So this is meant to be an interactive session. So at any point in time, interrupt. Whereas some of the other talks are going to be a bit harder to interrupt, but this one is meant to be an interactive talk.
Okay. Is it worth, before we continue, just a quick show of hands, is everyone familiar with what Team Foundation Server is and how that works?
I think I did that, didn't I?
We've done that? Yeah. Okay, right. So what we've got here is we launched the application. Our first problem was that allowing users to be able to see details from Team Foundation Server, we needed a way of authenticating with Team Foundation Server to see that detail. So what we started off here with is just a basic login page. This authentication, we'll talk a bit after this demonstration, but what this does is it authenticates against TFS Team Foundation Server using a service layer that we put in between. So what we can do here is
the reason we needed a service layer is we couldn't actually from Phone 7 we couldn't actually get a direct connection from Phone 7 into Team Foundation Server. So why Candy actually work so well is it provided that interface layer.
Sure. But it actually worked out quite nicely. Although we weren't able to use the Team Foundation Server client APIs within the phone, the way we've designed it now, it's probably give us more flexibility. And as Wilbur mentioned earlier, this ability to be able to share this application across multiple platforms, basically because nothing is being pulled using the device, everything's pulled from the service. This is just basically a shell showing the data feed. As we've seen here, we could have it on Candy like we did. In the offices on using WPF or Silverlight to say that on a touch monitor, we could have this run on Phone 7, and also with the service that we've got, we could run write an equivalent application with things like iPhone and Android. So there's no kind of limitation on the presentation layer of what we use to display this information, because all of the data is pulled back from a service that we've written internally. So we've typed all this information in by default. If you go to do this application is available on the marketplace, so if you do pull it down. We do offer a sample service, which just basically returns some dummy data, so it doesn't connect to a Team Foundation Server. All it does is return some sample data to get you to have a look and feel and play with the application. The application is a purchasable application. On purchase, what we do then is we do ship the service layer at that point. You can then hook that into your Team Foundation Server. But to get you for a look and feel for the application, we do have this shell service that just returns test data. So the first thing we wanted to do with this login page from a Phone 7 perspective and UI perspective is we don't want to prompt the user to log in every time. We want to make the user's experience as seamless as possible. So once they've logged in, we don't want them to have to then punch those details in every time they open the application. So one way we achieve this with Phone 7 is to use isolated storage. So the first time the user logs in with these credentials, we store these credentials in isolated storage. And then basically the next time the application loads, we do some logic to check isolated storage to make sure, do we have any credentials that are already valid? If so, we'll bypass that and go straight to the build monitor page. So as you can see, this is the first time we've run the application. We were prompted with a login page. But what we can show is once the status is updated, so as we've logged in, that's pulled to our Team Foundation server service that is hosted at Black Marble, and pulled this dummy data back now, and we can see the build statuses. I'll run through that briefly. What we can then do is if we quit out the application now and exit, so click the Windows button, what we should see now is there's one user experience example. It uses the stored credentials cached in isolated storage, passes them through to the service layer, automatically pulls the service, gives an update to say that it's successfully updated to the service layer. A bit of idea relating to T Foundation server. As you can see here, we've got a traffic light system, so it's green, amber, and red. Green means the build was successful. Amber is it was partially successful, so something's not caused the build to fail, but there's something wrong. Usually maybe some unit tests have failed to pass, something like that. So we can scroll through all this information. This gives us a brief summary of information. A few little things to point out you may not be able to see as well on the emulator, just things like the nice little tilt gestures. If you click and hold, you get the little context menu for QBuild. These are great features. They don't come necessarily as part of the Windows Phone Toolkit out of the box. They are additional tools which strongly recommend to enhance the user experience for Phone 7 development. There's a Silverlight toolkit available for Windows Phone 7, available on Codeplex. The toolkit by default does some great things if you want panorama and pivot and the default controls, but if you want to give that user experience enhancements, so things like the tilts that I've just shown, the context menus, the transitions to pages, the Silverlight toolkit available on Codeplex is a great additional tool to use when developing these applications. So a bit more detail on here is just things like it's showing us a brief summary of test passed, test failed, test inconclusive. We've also got build errors and build warnings there. So it's just giving us a snapshot of the data immediately to the user as soon as they get into the application. What we can then do from there is drill down into the build. And then all we're using at this point is a nice pivot control. So this is a nice feature of Phone 7 that you can use to scroll through if you've got a lot of data and you don't want to show it on one page because it'll just overload the user with information. A pivot control is a nice way of breaking that down into subsections. So all this is showing us is just a nice set of further details of the build status, so where the build was, where it run from source control, who requested the build, what time it was kicked off, the reason for the build, etc. We can then see a little bit more detail into the test status. Again, test pass failed, inconclusive. And overall, the test status, whether it passed or failed. Again, with compilation details. And another thing that we added, additional to the Candy, is the ability to add work items. So in here, this just pulls back a brief description of the title of the work item and who is it assigned to. And what we can then do at that point is pull back some controls here. This is just some information to enter a very basic work item. So things like tasks, bugs, issues, you can raise them and put a priority and a basic description, and that will go ahead and submit that data to Team Foundation Server. Another thing we've done, all this information here, again, we haven't stored any of this information on the device. All this information on each request is pulled back from the Team Foundation Server, so everything's in real time. So if user roles are changed, if new task types, the work items are changed at any point, the user's instantly refreshed with that data. And can access those new fields as soon as the application is ready to go and they're in there. So that was a brief overview of Team Foundation Explorer and what we've done with that. I think at that point we're going to go more into the architecture. So the basic talk of this is that we've knocked together a nice UI, but I think the key thing here is that this is all it is. It is just a shell. So as we talk a bit further now, a lot of the data is just pulled back from our service. So this user experience we've designed for Phone 7. As I've mentioned, we could write equivalent for iPhone or Android. And the call to actually get that data would be the same. It's just the user experience, how we design the user interface for that platform would change across different platforms.
So there you go. So it's all been good so far, and there's been no problems, right? So the actual reality for this talk, the reason we did this talk is we wanted to actually sharing the good bits is all very nice and fluffy, but the actual point is we wanted to share the bits that didn't quite go so well, and that's where we've come to now. So Phone Explorer and the bit we've described on the far side, TFS service layer, which is effectively a stripped-down version of our Candy layer, which we make available to people, and it connects to our Team Foundation server. The architecture on that makes it quite nice because it means the Team Foundation server doesn't get hammered by lots of devices polling all the time, and if the service layer isn't responsive, I'm less worried than our actual Team Foundation server because that's actually doing real work. So the first thing we want to do is we thought, well, we've made the other one free. What's going to be the model for actually distributing this application? And we thought, we should probably sell it. It's going to be a really cool application. Let's sell it and put up a marketplace for a nominalish cost. And the advice we were given was, in marketplace, you can have a trial, or you can have a full application. Now, a trial, all a trial does is it says your application, there's a flag set that says, this application is a trial. The trial does not expire, it just will run forever. So the original thinking that the Phone 7 team had was, what will happen is, you'll have an application, the trial will have limited functionality, and then people will purchase extra functionality. And we looked at our application and thought, well, how are we going to do that? We could have just the build screen and no detail. Is that a viable trial of the application? And the answer is no. The trial of the application is to use the whole thing or not to use the whole thing at all. So as it turns out, a lot of people are thinking the same. In fact, most people are thinking the same. The solution is you have to build your own licensing server. Something somewhere in the cloud or on-premise that will actually, as the application starts up in trial mode, it will call it, say, here is the ID of the phone, it is in trial, and the licensing server then stores the data to say, on the first of the month you started, and 14 days later, this trial is no longer valid. It's a fairly trivial service to write. I mean, how long did it take?
About a day's worth of work. So again, it was just another service that we exposed to the back-end basic database, and we just use Entity Framework. And it's just a simple table with a field for the phone device ID, the trial start date and end date. Obviously, we did at the time think of other ideas of maybe embedding a date the first time they load the application up, to maybe store a date in isolated storage. The risk with that is that when they uninstall the application, it would uninstall the isolated storage. So rather than trying to, again, put something in the actual phone device, we thought we'd manage that up as a service that we can control outside of the scope of the application again.
Yeah. So It's not a hard thing to fix, but I've got to be honest. I was genuinely surprised that a timed trial is not a standard part of marketplace. Whether that changes in trial, talk about Mango in about an hour or so, or the next version of Phone 7, but it's not there now. But it is very simple to fix. If you have to do it, you have to do it. Now, I think in hindsight, we probably should have actually put an advertising model in, but I'll talk about that when we come to conclusions at the end. Okay, so all development suffers from the same sort of problems: performance, availability, caching, and optimizing code. Now, I'll talk about performance in my Mango talk. Phone 7.1 talk, sorry.
Okay.
I'll get used to that one. But if you want to do the availability and caching.
Yeah, well, a little bit on performance with regard to this is obviously the first time this service was written, as we've shown in the previous video, we had the Candy application we have in the office that does have a service layer, and we've just built on that to pull back more details for Team Foundation server. One consideration we had to take from the start is that performance of the service, typically it was just on a desktop client which was running, bandwidth wasn't an issue, it ran internally in the office, we could cache data, there was no issue. When you put it on a device like Phone 7, those things show up a lot easier. You don't always know whether you're going to have a good data connection. So we had to make some performance tweaks to the actual service layer, was a key thing. So the first issue was actually just making sure it was responsive. So as you saw then, the response time to get the build details was a couple of seconds initially when we first run that. Based on the way the code was performing at the time, it was taking anything up to a minute. So a consideration is just data size. So although you can consider using a service layer to use many platforms, you've got to think of the different limitations of the platforms as well, the devices that they're going to be showing on obviously are going to have different limitations, so that's a consideration we had to take in at the start. Caching, We used a lot for our isolated storage, so the login page that you saw, we've used isolated storage to cache that data. Things like the build details, so rather than every time the user logs in, they get a blank screen until the latest build details are displayed. What we've done is cached the last time the user synced with the Team Foundation server, again using isolated storage, just to enhance the user's experience. So it's nothing to do with the data that's been retrieved, it's just all about the user's experience on the platform, on the devices, to kind of enhance that and make the wait time not feel as long as it maybe potentially could be, depending on what data connection in, so they can look at build details from the last status, from the last time they synced with Team Foundation server, while the device is updating in the background.
Okay, should we move on?
Yeah.
I think this is. I'll do one piece on this, which is the one thing about this is we're a bunch of developers, and with a grown-up supervision and a ruler and a sharp pencil, we can just about draw a straight line. We write code. Luckily, we have a UX fairy inside the organisation who does a remarkable job of keeping us in line and making things look really good. There is a genuine thing that if you're a developer, find a UX fairy. If you're a UX fairy, find a developer. It will make a massive difference. Phone 7, Windows 8, Surface, they all rely on deep integration between developers and designers. And without that collaboration, you can't actually achieve the magic. That's my personal opinion.
Sure. Another one in the context of Phone 7 as well is I'd encourage you to read the Metro design guidelines as well. So I'm not sure if we're going to talk this at the end as a marketplace submission, but things that caught us out is like the application bars, the way positioning buttons, how you want to bring across the user's experience. Is fine, but you've also got to take in consideration the platform it's on. So obviously, if it's an Android, maybe a bit more open. Apple sometimes has some guidelines. Phone 7, again, has its guidelines of how it has things working. So things like placing back buttons in the application bar, home bar, things that caught us out. So as you could see, we could drill down into various parts of the application. So we thought, great, we'll put a home button to send the user back to it. After submitting that to Marketplace and reading the Metro designs again, I mean, pointing to it, we found things like that. It goes against Metro design, and it's just things to be aware of. The device may work fine, and you may be happy with the look and feel, but when it goes to Marketplace, these kind of things will be looked at by Microsoft, and it may determine whether the application is successfully submitted to Marketplace, or it may be bounced back to you with feedback. So it's just one thing to catch out, to watch out for when considering submitting an application to Marketplace. As I've mentioned again, the Silverlight Toolkit's a great tool for enhancing user experience as well, and using some of the Metro design key requirements that Microsoft encourage you to do, so things like transitions, tilt effects, all those kind of nice things that you'll see on the device out of the box are there and available as a separate download on Codeplex. So again, I'd encourage you to download that and have a look at the features that are available there. It will save you a lot of time in the long run.
It can actually halve the length of your project to get that. If you want a really slick UI for free, use the Silverlight Toolkit. Okay, so we'll now talk about a mythical company. We'll call them White Marble, maybe, because Black Marble doesn't make mistakes. our submission of the 07 application actually took two goes. The first go, there was just a few alignment problems which they wanted sorted out, and actually from the first submission to it being in Marketplace, I think was something like 18 hours. And we thought, fine, we've learned our mistakes, off we go. I can only describe getting TFS Explorer into Marketplace as, for White Marble, I hasten to add, not us, mildly traumatic, but it was all our own fault. As Robert said, we hadn't fully read all the Metro guidelines. Now, we actually used the Metro guidelines for our Surface application, because actually Surface was one of the first products Microsoft came out that had Metro. I'm a big fan of Metro, as you'll find out later. But we did come a cropper. So going down the trial one we've covered, the UX changes, it wasn't just the home button. We had, that's fell on exit. We had a really strange problem that we wanted to make sure that people could log out. And we have quite, if you notice, there's quite a few screens. But at any point in time, you can log out, because we think that's the right thing to do. Somebody's looking at your machine, you don't look at bills, yada, yada, yada. And so the back button will take you back through screens. Now, if we've gone through five or six screens, and then we log out and we hit the back button, what should happen? The reality is the back button should actually take you out of the application as if you'd been to the front screen. The problem we came across was the stack of transitioning pages really wanted to take you back. And now you actually found a better solution to the one that we had. So I'll let you cover this bit because we had a bit of a naughty way to fix this problem.
Well, the solution we came up for this case at this point was we went to Microsoft, and what we did is at the point of logging out, we said, right, at that point the user's logged out, don't allow the go back, but the back button to effectively work at that point. And that's a breaking change from Microsoft's perspective. You should never interrupt the go back button, basically. So they should always be able to go back somewhere. So whether it's not back to your application, it should be able to go back to the previous state past that. And the problems we had at the time of doing that is that we looked on various forums and sits up various different advice, and there wasn't an actual sound way of doing that. And the only way we could actually get that to work in time for submission was to actually just cause the application to throw an exception, which by any means is not an acceptable
yes
way to handle that. So the way that it can be done now is there's a way there's various blog posts about being able to when you transition from pages, you can determine what pages can be set to a go back. So you can almost bypass it, so it doesn't store it in the hardware state for the transitions to go back to. It bypasses it as a go back. And the way we've done it now is so that you can then, rather than it going back to the previous page, it realizes that that isn't a page that it can no longer go back to, and it skips back to a previous page, whether that was if you was in your email or calendar. So it'll bypass the back buttons for the application that were done within the phone application, sorry, and then go back to any previous state outside the scope of the Team Foundation application.
But it was interesting that actually there was no, it was very hard to find the advice. We've actually, did you post actually a summary of that advice?
Sorry?
Have you written a post on that, the summary of that advice on your blog?
No, I haven't yet, but I will do, yeah.
If you do that, it was just one of those strange things. There's so much information on Phone 7, it was just such an odd one not to find. And releasing an application, the only way to get an application into Marketplace was to actually throw an exception and have the application crash. Didn't feel quite right for some reason. But that's actually what happened on the first rev, and we actually got into Marketplace with that. It's now been fixed. We also, the other problem we had was there's some very strong guidelines on the application must be completely contained. And what they mean by that is that if you take the application, you shouldn't have to buy or do anything else. And what that really meant is, if it has a login, because obviously ours wants to connect to your own TFS server or my TFS server, we actually had to provide a login mechanism and enough login information that if anybody bought the application who didn't have TFS, they could trial it. So, I mean, the answer is quite a simple one. We built a fake service, which is used for trial. But you won't get through Marketplace unless basically the testers in Marketplace can connect to a service and fully use the application. Now, this has some quite significant problems if you're building a corporate application and obviously the login is into your corporate network. I'll talk about that when I talk about Phone 7.1. There are now some solutions for all of that, so that's okay. But that one actually caught us out. But probably the worst one was light and dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thing that caught us out, which is difficult to test on the emulator. So the emulator is great for just getting, from a dev perspective, for getting a look and feel of how your application is moving. But things like light and dark support and being able to access things like Photo Hub integration and all those other kind of aspects that are available on Phone 7 you can't do through the emulator. So one thing that did actually catch us out, because initially we were just working with emulators, we didn't have devices in the office, was light and dark theming. So obviously if you've worked with the Phone 7, you'll know there's two different themes. There's a dark theme where you get everything's in the black background, and basically there's a light, which is a white background. One thing to consider is when you're styling your application, as you can see, ours was a white background, black background, sorry, with white text. But what we didn't realise is by not considering the style of the actual text to what it should be set to, and just inherently using the inherited theme from the phone device, what we found is, by switching to a light theme, all the text would suddenly appear black, at which point, with a black background, the text becomes unreadable. something that caught us out because we couldn't test that necessarily in the emulator, and it's just something we overlooked in the actual design of the application for this. So we would encourage that at some point, if you can get hold of a device, just even a single device, and be able to deploy it to that. It does save a lot of time and effort of going through the rounds of marketplace again to just get a proper look and feel of how the application works and the device. As great as the emulator is, sometimes, as you may have seen, the tilt effects, the transitions don't always work as great on the emulator as well. You may get a bit slightly different user feedback from the actual physical device, so we'd always encourage, where possible, to be able to deploy that to a physical device and test your application on that before submitting that to marketplace to get a look and feel for the application.
Yep. Actually, no, I've missed one. There was also a... we also suffered an RTS error, a Robert Too Stupid, I won't say which one, but it might have been me. On submission, they're very keen that all of the iconography and all the imagery that you submit for the marketplace matches your application, oddly enough. And actually, halfway through the fixes, we'd finished the application, and we were halfway through, and due to the light and dark changes, we changed some of the imagery. But I was doing the submission to Marketplace, and I'd forgotten to pick up the new imagery. And so we submitted the old imagery for Marketplace and the application, and we were tanked. We just tanked. I think it took about 8 minutes, and it just came back and said, this isn't even the same application. So don't get me wrong, it's very easy to submit to Marketplace. It's a very easy process, and the guidelines are really easy to follow. But on your fifth or sixth go through, do pay attention. Yes.
So from that, what we'd encourage, there is a Marketplace submission guidance. It's about a 60-page document, and we'd encourage to read that through before you contemplate submitting an application to Marketplace. That just lists things. It's almost a checklist of, have you got the right icons, are they the right sizes for the various different things, so for the PC hub, the Marketplace, the actual phone icons, the live tile icons all have to be in the right resolution and the right format, so it details all that. Things like size of ZAP files, what the ZAP file can contain, also details things like your manifest file. So by default, when you create a phone application, it adds a manifest file under the properties, and that just basically says that this application will run. You know, it'll be able to use location. It'll be location aware. It'll use the media library. It'll use the picture hub. What they recommend is that you only limit it to what the actual device application is using, rather than just saying it's going to use everything. That's another one to watch out for. If you just leave that as a default, it can sometimes come back if the device isn't making, the application isn't making use of those features, and you're just saying it's got access to everything. Microsoft may throw that back to you as well. And that details everything like that they need to check through. It also relates you to links to be able to show you how to run through those as well. So it's a very detailed document, and it's worth just spending an hour or two just running through that and going through the checklist before submission to Marketplace.
And as we said before, get the UX people in early. Fitting it later is not necessarily a solution at all. Okay? I think there's one more, isn't there? Or is that the end?
I believe that's it.
Okay. So the one piece I'd say is, so one of the choices which we made was to sell the application. I think in retrospect, I think we should have actually made it an advertise-based model, but that's in retrospect. How many of you actually got applications up in Marketplace? Okay, quite a few of you. You put the thing up, you know these kind of problems, in which case hopefully you might learn something or not, because if you've got them up, you're probably fine already. But one of the things I'd say is, a lot of people come to me when we were talking to about have you all done your W8 submissions for your forms for payment, or has anybody had any problems with W8 submission? So I'm sure this won't make the Microsoft people too happy. So to actually get your payments, you actually have to submit a US tax form W8, which basically says, I don't live in the States, I'm not going to pay any US tax, there is an agreement between my country and yours, love and kisses, developer. And you send it off to them, and then you won't pay any tax in the US, you declare the tax in this country. I think we've sent 3 in so far, and we've had no successful receipt of a W8 form by Microsoft yet. Has anybody actually had the W8 form actually received? No. And that seems to be a genuine problem with the Windows Marketplace right now. if you submit your W8 form. For those of you who are going to submit a W8 form, we're being recorded, so I won't use the word. Developers tend to be very careful. I'm an incredibly careful person. I worry a lot. So I read through all of the tax legislation that I was signing up to, because I'm like that. And I would say, if you're worried, read it yourself. But the W8 form is a genuine. There is an agreement between both the UK and Ireland with the US for zero tax for tax exemption, and signing the form, you're perfectly okay to do so. Is my understanding. But if you're worried, check yourself, or just sign the form and send it off. So this comes into my next talk, not the next one, the one after that, that in the new version of Marketplace, you'll be able to fill in your W8 form online and have it all sorted in one go. You have no idea how good that is. So, okay? Are there any questions? I think we're up at the end. Gentlemen, well, wait for a...
Which messaging protocol did you use for your service layer? I think that makes a big difference in terms of performance.
For our service layer, we've just used WCF at this point.
Did you use a POX, or did you use SOAP or JSON?
It's just standard SOAP at the minute, as it stands. It seems to work okay for us. Response time from the actual physical server.
The deserialization time is supposed to be significantly higher, so...
There have been a lot of person using SOAP and the XML. The way it deserializes the XML and serializes, it does take some time for us. Yeah. On a quick data connection, pulling back the billings we're getting, it's about 4 seconds.
I think they recommend using JSON for a lot of these services on the mobile devices now for performance reasons. Would you agree with that principle?
I think so, yeah. Where it's... At the time, we were familiar with SOAP. We hadn't done much with JSON, so that's why we stuck with that. And performance-wise, it's worked for us. I think I wouldn't necessarily say you have to use JSON. I think it depends on the amount of data. If you're familiar with the technology and you can get a good response and performance from that, then I don't see a reason not to stick with that. But I can see reasons for sticking with other ones. Like I said, we got it to an acceptable level. If it was still, like I said initially, it was about 30 seconds for response. If it was still at that... after we'd done the refactor of the code and performance tweaks, then we probably would have looked at alternative products, but we decided to make the approach to stick to a technology we're familiar with. Can we get good performance out of that? Yes. Or acceptable performance from a user's experience. We felt that we did, but yeah, if at that point we felt that we weren't getting it as good performance or we could enhance that, then we'd definitely look at other alternatives to pulling that data from there, yeah.
I think it's because we're very careful on caching. So there's one thing we didn't actually talk about. About halfway through, there's quite a lot of work had to be done on tombstoning.
Yeah.
And so for those of you who aren't familiar, tombstoning is when the application's effectively put to sleep while something else is happening. I'll go through that in my next talk. But actually getting your caching and your saving in line, more for tombstoning than anything else, will actually solve a lot of those problems. Yeah, I think that's all we can say on that one.
Sorry. What about maintenance of the product in terms of updates and also withdrawal of the product from the marketplace?
So, and as the updates have been very successful, certainly throughout the... Because we did the... Due to criticism was on 07, the update process was an absolute dream. Effectively, you resubmit it and it's recertified, and then as soon as it's ready, the only thing you actually had to do was make sure you remember to up the revision number. And once the revision number was updated, the whole thing went in, and I think within a few hours it was being distributed out to all of our staff's phones. So that didn't be a problem. Now, I haven't actually removed something from Marketplace, so I don't think it'd be fair for me to comment. I'm not trying to dodge the question. Actually, I've just never had to do it. I'll try and find out for you. Have you had a problem removing an application? Okay.
In terms of things like MVVM or MVC, is there anything like that you used, or is it just standard kind of...
For this application, so the model, the data layer is coming from the service, and then we've used an MVVM design pattern to actually pull that data, so it binds the data to a view model, which is then basically renders the page. So that's all we're using is just view models on the actual phone device to display that data. All the data, all the model data is pulled back from the service layer. Then we use view models to just display that data. So very quick to flesh out the pages. Once you've defined your view models based on your service layer, fleshing out the pages was very quick at that point. The bulk of the work actually for this application was done on the service layer, getting that performance and getting the data out of Team Foundation server that we wanted to display on the device. Fleshing out the pages was very quick after that.